The Church of God the Eternal presents How to Keep the Sabbath. This is the number 6 tape in this series, and it will be given by Mr. Raymond Cole.
All right, brethren, let's get into the message today, and I certainly hope that I can complete it. That is one aspect of it. I'm not going to complete all of it because I have a lot more material that I have to work out yet to complete this subject with regard to holy days. Now, I don't mean now just annual days. This is a term now meaning holy days. So the Sabbath is holy, and so are annual occasions. So we're talking about all of them. They're holy occasions as set apart by God. Up to this particular point, by way of synopsis, we have seen the following. God himself gave us commands concerning holy days, and he said that they're to be hallowed. We went all the way through these things. He said you're to keep them, whatever that means. And he said they're to be sanctified, that is, set apart. Then we found what God means by keeping them, how we are to honor and respect those occasions. It's a time of rest. We even took a good long look as to how we're supposed to respond in that regard, what rest means, and so on. The how, the when, the where. We understood the significance of holy, because they're called holy days. We also found that as holy days, God expects us to assemble. And then we found that there is certain behavior specifically proscribed. He said, no work may be done on these occasions. He said also that no business may be conducted. He also said that no personal pleasure is to be carried out on those days. And then fourthly, he even said that we have to control our minds and our thoughts. And then we saw that we, by virtue of the responsibility incumbent upon us, must proclaim those times as holy convocations. In order to carry out a convocation, it is absolutely necessary to assemble, because that's what it means. We find also that just any location is not acceptable in the sight of God, but at appointed places. We're going to see a lot more concerning that later on here. Now, why? We're going into today's sermon now, and we're going to note in these responsibilities some of the character of God. So, in the first place, we have seen that holy days are appointments appointed by God. We found out which ones were appointed by God, what times. We found out also that the feasts employ that same word. They are appointments of God as a fixed time, a time of assembly. The word frequently used for feast, not exclusively, because it is a matter of its usage, which determines the significance, but broadly used, a Hebrew word for feast is the word mogad, meaning seasons. So we know then that holy days occur within seasons to a very large extent. Also, that same word, the word mogad, having to do with seasons and so on, is employed over and over and over in the expression of the congregation. The assembly of the congregation, the convoking of the congregation. Anytime or frequently when you see the expression of the congregation, it is the word mogad. It means that assembly coming together under the authority of God. I gave you a few texts on that. I shall not take time to give you more. Now I want you to understand that when God issued these commands, and he said to his chosen people at that time, "You shall proclaim these as holy convocations." He is uttering then a specific responsibility incumbent upon his chosen ministry regardless of the time. So as Moses, empowered by God, received the words of God and proclaimed them as holy convocations, then today or any time in between, God made the ministry accountable for proclaiming them as holy time. It applies to both. Now what we need to understand is that God always honors his own. For we find now there are other words, of course, and I'll try to give you some of the specific deviations here as we go through with regard to Hebrew words. But principally, I'm going to use the words of Mogad and Gaog. But in this case, I want you to notice something he said here in Daniel 7 and verse 22. Daniel 7 and verse 22. "Until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High." So we're talking about now the time of the return of Christ and the establishment of a world-ruling order under the auspices of Jesus Christ. "And judgment was given to the saints of the Most High," that is, the inheritance of the kingdom prepared from the foundation of the world, as we read elsewhere. And the time. Here is the word Zeman, Z-E-M-A-N, which is a Chaldean word, because basically from the early part of Daniel 7 through the 11th chapter of Daniel, it is written in the Chaldean language, as also a few other texts, some in Ezra. There's even one text, I believe it's Jeremiah 50 and verse 8, in the book of Jeremiah. These are written in the Chaldean language. Now, what you need to remember is that the Chaldean language is a sister language to the Hebrew language. As a matter of fact, many, many of the words are exactly the same. And here is one example of it. For the Chaldean language for this time is Zeman, Z-E-M-A-N. It is exactly the same word in the Hebrew. Exactly the same. Now, this was one of the considerations we gave to the article, remember, that we wrote on sacred names. It's nothing more than a mystical thing generated out of the hearts and minds of a lot of people who do not have God's Holy Spirit. People come along and tell you, "Well, you can't use that word. That is pagan." Well, if it is, then there are a lot of pagan words in the Hebrew. Because the same word for that is commonly called Baal, which means Lord, is Baal in both languages. Or let's be more specific, several of the names for God, El, for instance, is exactly the same in the Hebrew as in the Chaldean language, the Babylonian language. So we come along like a lot of these people and they say if they use the word Elohim or Eloah, which is one of the other names, or El Shaddai or whatever the name may be, oh, now we're talking about God. Are we? Who in the world were the Babylonians referring to when they used the word El? Were they talking about the true God? Or were they talking about their God? So this idiocy that if you use a certain name, you have to be talking paganism is absolutely a crock of malarkey. There is no such. And so the whole concept is that if you appropriate a certain name or a certain language, that's sacred. There is no sacred language that we know of, period. All right, in this case now, and I don't want to get too far afield in this, the word time is zeman, which is Chaldean, but it's exactly the same thing in the Babylonian, Hebrew language, which comes from the Hebrew, incidentally. And it means an appointed occasion. From the root verb zeman, Z-A-M-A-N, meaning to fix a time by appointment. Meaning to fix a time by appointment. All right, let's read it now with that understanding. Until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the fixed appointed time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. In other words, the inheritance of God's promise is by determined time. God honors the appointments of his time. Oh, I could give you many examples of it. One of them is the fact that Christ came to this earth, you know, in his first appearance at a fixed or appointed time. The delivery out of Egypt was according to a fixed or a determined appointed time. That time came and God upheld it. We now take a look at them and we think that we don't have to obey anything. We make our own determinations. But not acceptable in the sight of God whatsoever. So we find then that God himself adheres to his appointments. He has at every time. And he set up many, many of those appointments. But men do not honor. They change. You can never trust them because they change. Here in Daniel 7:25, I want you to notice something else now. And he, speaking a particular representative figure here, he shall speak great words against the Most High and shall wear out the saints of the Most High. A prophetic event of the last days, and think to change times. There's that zeman again. He's going to think to change appointments. But what I want you to notice here now is that it both is both prophetic and historical. As it occurred with regard to Babylon of that time, so here is an indication that it will occur prophetically in our time. An indication, therefore, that somebody presumed to change fixed times. Shall think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time, and times in the dividing of time. I don't want to get into the prophetic aspect of that now. I want to merely show you that somebody thinks to change. And appointments that are commensurate with the appointments of God. Because God honored his back here. In the appointed time, the saints are going to inherit the kingdom of God. Up here, somebody is going to change those appointments, dishonoring God. All right? Now, when? Let's say in the historical sense. When did somebody really change? Well, let's go back now. And here is another word for feast. This is the Gehag, G-H-A-H-G. Here in 1 Kings 12 and verse 33. 1 Kings 12, and let's notice verse 33, for it says, so he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel. Now what I want you to notice is Bethel means the house of God, or the location from which the law, the purpose of God, goes forth. Here he was now in Bethel. If now man is to live, not by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, and the one is the type, as the other is the antitype, then obviously these things, the same things, have to proceed from the house of God in the last days, which he had made in Bethel the 15th day of the 8th month, even in the month which he had devised of his own heart and ordained a gehach, or a G-H-A-H-G, a feast. There is none, if you'll go back and look at it, in the 8th month. But somebody, for reason, established his own. Now, why did he do it? As I give you the reasons for this, I want you to remember what occurred. The reasoning of Jeroboam was that if I allow them to go back down into Jerusalem, I'm going to lose their hearts. They're going to turn away from me and they'll turn back, because the truth would have ordained or regulated them rather than what I am trying to give to them. So he was incredibly apprehensive. So what he wanted to do now was to pull these people aside so they no longer kept the legitimate feasts of God at the appointed location. In so doing, he would have lost their hearts. They would have turned away from him. What is it that people, and we have covered this many times, remember, why do they pull people away today? They want to make merchandise out of them. That is, they want to exploit them, to take economic advantage, to use them for their own purposes. Isn't that what the problem with Jeroboam? What they're trying to do is alienate them, and for personal advantage. It is all of this combined, my dear brethren, that made me take the course of action that I did. I understood these things. And I said to God, even though I knew prophetically there was to be an apostasy, I said, I will not be responsible. You will have to send them. Now you show me somebody else that took that approach. Every other case I know of, and I can give you the record on it, they have gone out deliberately trying to destroy. And that in itself is a proof of their source. It is satanic to the core. This is exactly what Jeroboam did. So they changed the feasts. Now, what I want you to understand is that it doesn't always mean a change of time, a change of location is equally bad. We're going to come to some things later on. Now, what was God's response? Let's see if we can't get into that. Hosea 2. Hosea 2. Here was the warning that went out to our type, but it is also prophetic. Hosea, the second chapter, and let's begin in verse 10. And now will I discover her lewdness. See, they went into defiance and rebellion, and God equates that with unfaithfulness in a marriage. Now will I discover her lewdness, because remember, Israel was married to the one who became the Christ. And she became, well, everything you can call her. That's what the Bible calls her. And now will I discover her lewdness. God's saying, I'm now going to force her to face up to what she is. She's going to have to see it in raw reality. In the sight of her lovers. I'm even going to compel her now to become open and known for what she is in the sight of her compatriots, her lovers. And none shall deliver her out of mine hand. When God sets out to do it, she is going to go through it. And how significantly. Now notice, and I will cause all her, that's this same woman. In its prophetic type, it's not the nation of Israel, it's the church. And I will cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days. And here we have exactly that same word, the gehog, meaning the feast or the appointed time. Her new moons and her Sabbaths and all her solemn feasts. Now, in the first place, let's just notice that the first feast day up here is this Gehag, G-H-A-H-G, which means a feast or a festival. But in the second one down here, the solemn feasts, the word is Mogad. That means now it is the appointed times, the seasons, the assemblies. Technically, it means the congregation. Remember, the basic usage of that word is with regard to the congregation. What is happening now is God is showing there are various appointed congregations that are all assuming they are keeping feasts. Now, this is a prophecy of our very day. I'm going to show that to you a little later. Where are these people who presume then to keep feasts, appointed times of God, both by separation of assembly and in some cases a deviation from the day itself? I'm going to show you that in reality, that deviation involves one. We're going to come to that. One of them would be changed in time, the rest of them would be a matter of the locations. So what did he say? I will also cause all the mirth to cease. Her feast days, that is, their appointed occasions that they have taken, where they obviously have gone wherever they wanted to go, her new moons and her Sabbaths and all her solemn feasts, that is, the Mogad, their own appointed locations. And God is not happy with them. Now, somehow he is indicting someone in these last days, because they have times that are not acceptable and they have congregations that are not acceptable. Let's turn now to the text over here in Amos 5 and verse 21. Amos 5 and verse 21. He said, I despise your feast days. Now here's the same God talking to somebody. And he said, I don't like them. But it's the same word implying that they're keeping annual holy days. Well now, if they're keeping annual holy days, how on earth could he hate those? Because they're not in the right location and under the right circumstances. People for devious reasons who have forsaken the appointments of God, the locations. Remember, they are appointments. And he said, not just any place, not ever what occurs to you whimsically, but where I have set my name. And we better know that. And we better know that we know it. So he said, I despise your feast days. When is the time element? Verse 20, shall not the day of the Lord? Here now is the period of time leading up to the second coming of Jesus Christ. Is there any doubt of that? The day of the Lord leads into the second coming of Christ. So here is somebody presuming, to keep holy days, that is, the actual annual holy days themselves, but incorrectly, in the days leading up to the second coming of Jesus Christ. And God says, I hate them, and I loathe them. Who in the world is doing this? I despise your feast days, and I will not smell in your solemn assemblies. And that word for assemblies here is an interesting one. It is, in the Hebrew, A-T-S-A-R-A-H. Atsarah. Atsarah. Atsarah, in the Hebrew, means an assembly or festival, which comes from the word, the infinitive, atsar, meaning to enclose or hold back by maintenance, rule, or assembly. Now, what he is saying here then is this. Somebody has appropriated those days, and now through fear, through intimidation, through deception, through something, are holding them subject to their whim. Who then in these final days has actually taken the literal holy days, even the correct ones, and now hold in subjection through intimidation, through deception, through various other means, people for purposeful exploitation? Somebody is, because that's the meaning of that word. You better be sure on that one. Next, Malachi 2 and verse 3. Malachi 2 and verse 3. He said, behold, I will corrupt your seed and spread dung upon your faces, even the dung of your solemn feasts. Well, that's strong language. Now, notice. And one. Which one was that? Pentecost. And one shall take you away with it. Now, I don't want to be dogmatic in that, but I don't know of another one that did. Do you? And one shall take you away with it. People have been destroyed on the ridiculous concepts that have been generated with regard to holy days. Has anything wrought greater havoc than the calendar and the holy days? Everybody now is an expert on the calendar. Why, you don't even halfway realize how many articles we have on the calendar now. Unbelievable. And everybody is an expert on the meaning of the holy days. I just got another one from somewhere up in Washington telling me what Pentecost is all about. You have to sit back and just shake your head. Now, how do we know that Worldwide had it correct then? By faith. Because for one thing, it was the only organization known on the face of the earth that kept all of God's laws. And every deviation came out of it. Every devious concept came from that, because every man became an expert. Now, if then Worldwide is still that body, oh, I know they're apostate. I'm well aware of it. So was Israel. God called her an apostate. But was she still Israel? Yes, and she still is. So the church went apostate, but is it still the church? Indeed. Because God said that it would never change. That was one of the promises he gave. The gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Well, it may be getting close, but they won't. I have assurance in that. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. Then the Bible tells us that there was but a remnant who remained faithful to that which was given. Where are they, brethren? Don't ask me. You can't put two and two together, it's too bad. Somebody, God said, as a remnant, would be faithful. All right, now I want us to turn back very quickly to Isaiah 1 and verse 14. And I can tell you right now, this is not going to be the last one either. But then, after all, I think it's better to explain it wholly than to slip over it, isn't it? Isaiah 1 and verse 14. Your new moons. If there is anything that is absolute, it's with regard to Isaiah. And here we are looking at our day, the times leading into the return of Jesus Christ. Because chapter 2 tells you very clearly, or speaks very clearly, of the establishment of that kingdom. And yet here now is an introductory chapter leading into that, meaning our day, coming, that is, the time leading up to the actual return of Christ. He said, your new moons and your appointed feasts, my soul hate. They're a trouble unto me. So somebody, therefore, is keeping feast days. That's right, they're out keeping feast days. And he said, I hate them. That ought to sober anyone. They have God just come out and just deliberately say, here I am. Well, God, you know I'm keeping these days. And he said, I loathe them. I hate your behavior. Those are strong terms. And I mean strong terms. And he says, your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hate. Meaning, obviously, that he has taken major contention with these people that are out here computing the calendar. They've come up with their own new moons. They've come up with their own appointed times. And God says, I'm not happy with them at all. My soul hateth, they are a trouble unto me. I am weary to bear them. So he says then of the Mogad, that is their seasons. Obviously reflecting back upon their development of calendars and the subsequent feasts. I hate them. They're a stench. They're abhorrible. I don't want any part of it. So there's something going on in the world in our very day. Even though they keep holy days, quote unquote, observing annual high days, and God isn't a bit satisfied with them. Does that mean he doesn't like anybody that keeps the holy days? Well, we just went through that, where he said, you'd better be cognizant of them. You'd better be aware of them. Now, how in the world can he both be against them and for them? Except somebody is not correctly keeping them. They're manifestations of defiance and rebellion. And you can never be right in that regard. All right, let's notice now here in Jeremiah 8 and verse 7. If there's anything, you know, and I, years and years ago, and I remember speaking on this a number of times when I'd covered the first part of Isaiah, the first chapter, actually. And God, through Isaiah, said, you know, well, let me just read it here, and I'll come back to Jeremiah 8 very quickly here. But here in the first part of Isaiah, he said, hearken, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, chapter 1 and verse 2. For the Lord has spoken, I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. Historically, that was Israel. Prophetically, it's the church. The ox knows his owner, and the ass his master's crib. In other words, the two dumbest of all animals. Brute force, all right enough, but little upstairs, or up in the front, in this case. And yet he said, they know their master. They know where to get fed. And they're quick to go there. But now notice the comparison. The ox knows his owner and the ass his master's crib, but Israel does not know, my people do not consider. He said, they're dumber than ox and jackasses. Ah, sinful, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. Children that are corruptors, that is in the progressive tense. Don't give them anything because before you can turn around, they're going to corrupt it. They have forsaken the Lord. How can you forsake if you've never had him? There's somebody that forsook him. And in the last days, they have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. That is, they were up here. Now they're back here. They've gone away backward. Now let's notice Jeremiah 8 and verse 7. Jeremiah 8 and verse 7, he said, yea, the stork in heaven knows her appointed times. That is, birds that fly. They know their allotted times. They know their appointed times. Same word. But now what did he say next to that? And the turtle and the crane and the swallow observe the time of their coming. But my people know not the judgment of the Lord. Birds can do it. Animals can do it. Fish can do it. All the creation of God can fundamentally obey, but rebellious, stubborn, cantankerous, defiant man. Surely that ought to make us sit up. We're dumber than birds, dumber than ox and sheep, dumber than the fish, worse off, my dear brethren, than all the created subjects of God. And yet we were the only ones created with intelligence. That's quote unquote, incidentally. See, we can't find God's appointments for us because we're corruptors. You even give it to them, as God did to ancient Israel, and they turned it around and corrupted it. He gives it to them in the last days, and they'll turn around and corrupt it. The only thing they know is perverseness. All right, now what we have seen at this particular point is that appointments are very significant in the sight of God. Very. And we'd better be cognizant of them. I've already gone through to give you what those appointments are. I've read every one of them. God gave us appointments. They're proclaimed. Our problem is we just don't want to hear it. That is mankind's problem. But thank God there are some who do. But even those who do, if they're not careful, will allow perversion to enter in. They'll lose their perspective. And they're going to wind up in an arena that God abhors and hates. For many have. Now, why is it important to know? To know the times as well as the locations. You know, if somebody sent a letter to me and said, okay, you're to meet President Bush. If he didn't give me the place and the time, how in the world would I ever know when to go or where to go? So there are two things that are always required, time and location. Now I can stubbornly say, well, I don't think I have to go to Detroit. You know, I'd rather go to Jacksonville. But I can go down to Jacksonville and sit there, you know, with my entourage or whatever I'm taking with me. But if he isn't there, I've only deluded myself. Despite what kind of a time I thought I had. I can delude myself that, my, it was beautiful weather and we went boating and we did this and we did that. And I mean, we had a wonderful time. But the president wasn't there. So why is it important then to know the time and the location? Very important. In Exodus 23 and verse 15. Exodus 23. And let's note verse 15. For here we read, thou shalt keep the feast of unleavened bread. Thou shalt eat unleavened bread 7 days, as I commanded you, in the time appointed of the month Abib. There's one of the appointments. For in it thou camest out from Egypt, and none shall appear before me empty. Oh. In other words, that's where God's going to be. In other words, if you don't go to the right location, I don't care what kind of a time you had, was God there? I don't care how long we kid ourselves, you know, why God's every place in this earth, and I've even heard that. Why, that didn't have anything to do with it. Well, then, why in the world didn't somebody get back there and straighten God out? Because although, you know, he is every place on the face of the earth, that means omnipresent, yet he said that in some specific way, I'm going to be at designated locations on specific days. Because you're going to come before me. Which means, obviously, that if I have to go to a given location at a specified time, that his relationship at that particular time is altogether different than it is generally. So holy days, therefore, are appointed times when God is going to appear someplace. And if I want to go and have and to come before him and have a proper relationship with him, I'd better be where he is. Because he ain't in the other locations. We're going to see that a lot more clearly as we go on. Now I want you to notice verse 17. For here he said, 3 times in the year all thy males shall appear before the Lord God. That is, we'd better come before him on those occasions. I won't get into the matter, well, now, does that mean to go to a centralized location? That's not what we're talking about at this particular point. But it could be covered. All right, next I want you to notice Exodus 29. Exodus 29, and let's note verses 42 through 46. This shall be a continual burnt offering throughout your generations at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Now there is one of those locations, the door of the tabernacle of the assembly. That is the Mogad. Before the Lord. where I will meet you. He didn't say I'm going to meet you any place that you decide. He told them exactly where he was going to be. And he told them the times that he would be there. At the tabernacle of the congregation, before the Lord, where I will meet you to speak there unto you. And there I will meet with the children of Israel. And the tabernacle shall be sanctified by my glory. Or remember, we already talked about the sanctuary of God, where God would be and his glory would be, that we must reverence it because of the presence of God. Didn't we go through that? That's what he means. When we come here, brethren, if this happens to be the right place, you're coming into the presence of God. Do we always remember that? I wonder if he literally manifested himself, if it would change our behavior appreciably. Or do we tend to think, well, you know, obscurely, who knows? Or we forget about it because he's invisible. We don't see him, which is true of all spiritual things. And there I will meet with the children of Israel, and the tabernacle shall be sanctified by my glory. And I will sanctify the tabernacle of the congregation, that is the Mogad, and the altar. I will sanctify also both Aaron and his sons to minister to me in the priest's office, the type of what's going on in these days. And I have given you sermon after sermon to show you that the continuation of that is in the New Testament ministry through Jesus Christ. And I will dwell among the children of Israel and will be their God. And they shall know that I am the eternal their God. Isn't that what we're told is the essence of life everlasting? John 17, 1 through 5. This is life everlasting, to know the Lord God and his Son, Jesus Christ. So here's the type of it. Then I want us to very quickly notice Exodus 34, 21 through 24. Exodus 34. And let's read verses 21 through 24. 6 days thou shalt work, but on the seventh day thou shalt rest. In earing time and in harvest thou shalt rest. And thou shalt observe the feast of weeks, of the first fruits of wheat harvest, and the feast of ingathering at the year's end. Thrice in the year shall all your men children appear before the Lord God, the God of Israel. Three times shall you appear before God. Now it says the men. Why the men? Because they're supposed to be in charge of their families. And I can show you that that means they are then to take their families. In other words, God believes in his own authority. He issued the injunction to the male. Now, is the male in charge of his family or not? All right, then we could notice, and I'm not going to get into it because the time is up right now, yet I want to read Deuteronomy 12, 1 through 21. But I'm going to have to do that next time, and then we're going to pick up and hopefully next time complete this part of the subject. And then I'll get into other things that relate thereto following that.
Church of God the Eternal has just presented How to Keep the Sabbath. This was the number 6 tape in this series, and it was given by Mr. Raymond Cole.